second case for oral argument this morning is Jane Doe and Others Similarly Situated versus Clark Swearing and Mike Milstead. For the appellant, Doe is Mr. Steve Miller, an attorney from Sioux Falls. And for the appellees, I understand, Mr. Barnett, you'll be representing all parties, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Be Mark Barnett, the Chief Deputy Attorney General from Pierre. Mr. Miller, you may proceed, sir.
Thank you. May it please the court. I represent Jane Doe. She is the victim of a sex crime. She was a victim of an incest. And what she wants is for the offender's name not to be, well, for the offender's information not to be disclosed in the sex offense registry. Her position is a legal one based on statute. I'm here on a statutory construction issue. And her position is that the very definition of incest is defined in terms of victim identifying characteristics. The registry laws specifically state that registry information is a public record under Chapter 1-27, except that the name of the victim and excuse me, any identifying information regarding the victim of the crime are confidential and are not to be disclosed except to other law enforcement personnel. That's on one side of the equation. On the other side of the equation is a statute which says, actually I can give you the numbers, but they're in my briefs, 2222.32.1 specifies what is to be released from the sex offense registry. And it specifically says the name of the crime, which by itself would seem to demand that incest be disclosed as part of the registry. So that's on the other side of the equation. And as I see it, this appeal raises the question of how do we reconcile those two statutes.
Mr. Miller, are there regulations or directions or whatever for the local law enforcement on how they enter those crimes on the either on the registry or on the websites? For instance, just looking at them, there didn't seem to be a uniform way to identify the crime. Some may say rape, some may say rape in the third degree, rape in the second degree. Is there a directive, or is this a uniform manner, or do you know?
I don't know. I would doubt that it's a uniform manner, but that's just based on my personal life experience. The only direction, if there are administrative rules, I don't know of them, so I can't comment on that. The only directions I know of appear in the 16 categories, this is as of 2002, of sex crimes that are defined for purposes of the registry, and that's in 22-22-30.
Actually, though, in the statute itself, it does not define that particular crime as incest. The heading of the statute says incest, but the body of the language of the crime definition does not identify it as incest, quote unquote. Isn't that right?
Well, the offense that this offender was convicted of was incest in 22-22-19. There is a different rape statute which, as part of the definitional thing, talks about incest. That word appears in the definitional thing, but that offense is actually rape. And I know that argument has come up, and in my brief I think correctly say that the state waived it, the county, city respondents waived it in their answering pleadings below. Incest means, under the statute we're talking about, which lists the 16 categories, incest means the crime committed in 22-22-19.1. That's the one we're talking about.
If we were to agree with your analysis that this is prohibited in that it does identify a certain group of people that might be victims, would it be appropriate if we were to decide that it could be identified, but the only way it could be identified is just by the identifier rape and not incest? Would that satisfy your
That would satisfy my client's objectives, because then, I mean, her position is that the very definition of incest is what identifies her. If you call it rape instead, that I'm not sure that meets the elements of 2222.19.1. Actually, can I have a moment? I'd have to look.
Certainly.
I quote that penal statute on page 5 of my initial brief. Let's see, any person 14 years of old or older who knowingly engages in sexual contact with another person. So I guess I'd have to say that, you know, speaking legally speaking, talking as an attorney, reading the statutes, the incest statute deals only with sexual contact rather than sexual penetration.
But then, you know, changing that question after reading this, and looking at some of the web pages, some of them are identified as sexual contact. I mean, I saw a couple of them this morning when I was looking at it. So would that satisfy her if we were, or your, he or she, whoever your clients are, if it were just identified as sexual contact?
I'd have to say it would. I mean, her position would no longer exist at that point.
Because if you really read 19.1, there is no reference to the word incest in that language of that statute. The heading is, which has been put on by the Code Council, but the language of the statute itself does not identify incest.
Well, that could be, you know, I guess I would say that that doesn't surprise me, that the text of the statute itself wouldn't repeat the label unless the crime, like rape, is divided into degrees, and then maybe the text would. But if you're just talking about, you know, this is burglary, if you look at the burglary is divided into degrees. Come up with an example, Steve. I don't know. Find some felony that's not divided into degrees. I don't think the text of the statute is going to repeat the name of the crime. That'll be in the title. It'll be alleged as, you know, burglary, and everybody will know it's burglary.
Is it your argument then that the chief and the sheriff have the discretion under the statutes to post these crimes or not post them? I mean, what are you asking us?
I'm asking that the word incest not appear there in the registry.
All right. And are you arguing that they have that authority on their own to do that?
The respondents have taken the position that they don't. The respondents have taken the position that this other statute, -32.1, requires them to post the name of the offense committed. And so they have taken that position in resisting Jane Doe's petition. I argue in my brief that I don't know what -32.1 applies to. Does it apply to disclosure to other law enforcement agents? Does it apply only to disclosure to other law enforcement agents plus other registries nationwide? Or does it apply to release to the general public?
It doesn't apply to what has to be included on the registry.
If it well, I looked at the session law this morning in your law library, which I hadn't done before, and the session law itself applies to what has to be included on the registration.
Yeah, okay.
And which does not answer the question of, once you've got the registration, to whom is it disclosed and what has to be disclosed. We know from looking at the website, you know, I haven't looked at the Pennington County website. The only one I've even looked at is Minnehaha County. I haven't looked at it for my own personal reasons. I just don't do that. And if you have, then you know more information than I do. But where do these pictures come from? Where's the authority for these pictures? You know, where is the authority that the local police evidently think they have, which I guess goes back to your question, that because they have the information, and because it happens to be on a registration record, it can be given to the public. So the local authorities do not consider -32.1 as defining their duties for public disclosure, which is the respondent's position. But the local authorities don't agree with respondents. They think they can disclose everything.
Wasn't that decision controlled by Minders versus Weber?
I think Minders versus Weber upheld the constitutionality of the registration provisions. As I understand it, it was an ex post facto challenge. Mr. Minders was convicted before the registry scheme went into effect, and he claimed that because his conviction predated the registry scheme, he couldn't be required to register. And then there was discussion of potential harm to Mr. Minders by the information being publicly available. And, you know, I'm not saying that there are no public policy reasons for the registry. This court said there were in Minders, and I'm not here to disagree with that. But Jane Doe and I are here to disagree with whether information can be disclosed, which would tend to identify her.
Let's take Justice Meyer Henry's questions just a little bit further. And if they were to use the word, the words sexual contact, you say you would have no objection to that, and that would satisfy you and your client. But if they felt the necessity, say, to warn the neighbors and the public that this was, that sexual contact can be against an adult or against a child, and I can see where the neighbors would want to know whether the sexual contact was against a child or as an adult. Even that information could be added or specified and still would not disclose the identity to the extent that the word incest would it?
I think in general I can't disagree with you. You know, my client's position, I don't know. As you're asking me that as Steve Miller, and Steve Miller doesn't know. And
asking you as the attorney for Jane Doe.
If you're asking me as the attorney for Jane Doe, I will answer it very simply. Jane Doe's position is that the term incest tends to disclose her. Once you take that position away by calling it something else, her position disappears.
Yeah,
and then I no longer have any interest in, I guess, answering your question even.
Do we have the power to do that? I mean, doesn't the registry also include out-of-state offenses too?
Yes.
So if another state chooses to call it incest, do we have the power to tell to amend the judgment in effect and say it's not?
I think the legislature does, and they have done that by declaring parts of this confidential. They've got the right to do that. They would have the right to say that.
I guess that's my question.
Well, I quite frankly think this is probably a legislative question. My position is that Jane Doe's rights guarantee that the word incest not appear there.
Well, if the statute says if it prohibits any identifying information, and we were to conclude that the word incest, you know, could be identifying information or is identifying information, certainly we have the power to interpret what the legislature has done, don't we?
Yes.
And say that overrides the other statute that relates to the crime.
And that's, of course, exactly what I'm asking you to do. But as I understand your question, Justice Konenkamp, it went one step further. Now that we've determined that, can we say, no, you have to call it this instead? Or is that a legislative question? And I guess my question is, why should I care? If you've reached the first one, my client prevails. If you leave it up to the legislature, fine. If you do it yourself, fine. Do you want me to speculate?
Mr. Miller, let me get to the issue of statutory interpretation, because doesn't your case really rise or fall on what the meaning of the phrase is, any identifying information?
Yes.
Okay, so if I understand your argument, you're essentially asking us to hold that the word incest is identifying information.
Yes.
Well, if that's true, isn't identifying information kind of a continuum? On one end, obviously, you could use somebody's name or their social security number or their date of birth, and I don't think anybody in this room would disagree about that. And on the other end of the spectrum, you have very broad characterization of what happened. And where does this word incest fit on that continuum? Because, you know, when you identify the county where this offense took place, or the date, you've narrowed the class. That's your argument about narrowing the class of people that could potentially be victims. Any detail of any criminal offense, it seems to me, is narrowing the class of potential victims.
You know, I would have to agree with that any detail does narrow the class somewhat. Let's go to the far end of the, let's go to one far end of the spectrum. Let's say you identify the victim as male or female. Now you've got half the let's say you've got half the population as potential victims, half not.
That'd be a violation in your view?
Well, I'd be an idiot to say so. So I will say no, it wouldn't be a violation. And we all agree that there is a continuum here. That was the basis of the trial court's ruling, and I think I conceded that in the transcript. I'm sure I did. A class of victims, I'm sure I conceded that. At the other end of the spectrum would be something that would identify one person. Well, the legislature's already taken care of that by saying name. So when they say any identifying information, they have to mean something other than this. You know, if you don't agree with this, I lose. They have to mean something other than direct identification as you. You're my example, as you.
If that's true, then where do we draw the line? If we adopt your argument, we're going to have to draw a line in the sand and tell the public and the defendants in this case where that line is.
If you think that's your job, that's fine. I don't. I don't know where the line is drawn, and all I know is that the word incest defines it so narrowly that it's on that end of the spectrum, that the line has to be drawn somewhere this side of that class. I think that's a legislative question. You know, I think you make your decision. If the legislature wants to fix it, they fix it. You know, I'm not going to come up here and lobby in front of the legislature. My client won't care at that point. But you're right.
Why shouldn't you go to the legislature and have them fix it?
Why shouldn't I?
Or your client?
I wouldn't. Now you're asking Steve Miller. Steve Miller wouldn't.
Your client. You know, the people that are affected by this.
Well, I don't think she wants to come up here.
Well,
she doesn't want anything to do with any of this stuff. So maybe somebody should, but I guess my point is that that's a legislative determination.
She doesn't want to identify herself in a very specific way, right?
I don't blame her. You know, that pretty much covers it.
Okay. No one's chastised for sitting down early.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Mr. Barnett, you have 20 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court. Well, let me open by saying that although Mr. Miller describes incest as a very narrow category, the court is well aware that there are something like 20 classes, different subsections of people who can be the victim of an incest, stepsons and nieces and nephews and uncles and aunts and all sorts of relatives. And in fact, a statement in the Jane Doe's brief at page 4, I think, probably is dispositive on this case. You may not agree with me, but, quote, "This incest offender has multiple family members who would fit the you can't legally marry element of incest." So even he is conceding that were the public to look at this particular offender's page on the website, that there would be multiple family members who might fit that description. So it doesn't identify her. You can't read out the word identifying from the phrase any identifying information. It doesn't say any information.
Do you see that the chief and the sheriff are mandated to put this information out, or is there some element of discretion they possess here?
Well, I think that under 22-22-32, the registration shall include, and it talks about the type of sex crime. And then 32.1, when a law enforcement official provides information from the registry, the information shall include the offender's name, address, the type. And indeed, as Justice Zinner pointed out, and the date of the commission of the crime and the date of the conviction, which to an industrious investigator, they could go to the website, look at the date of conviction, go over and get the court file, where Jane Doe's name is in the court file on public record. But my point is, and indeed, and let me add this, Mr. Miller argues that 32.1 is, in his view, designed to discuss the sharing of information between law enforcement agencies, not when the law enforcement officer provides it to the public. Well, first, law enforcement does not need additional authority to share information with other law enforcement. That authority exists throughout the code and has taken place since law enforcement began. But secondly, the whole purpose of this chapter is publication. The whole concept of this entire chapter is prevention by publication. Its very goal is to give people the information that they can use to judge whether or not this fellow three doors down is some risk to them. And I see no conflict in these statutes. I think they're clear. I think they need no construction. Under 22-30 sub 4, the registry specifically includes incest under 19.1. And then later they have to register, and incidentally under section 31, they have to register, and the only escape clause, the exemption that's in that statute, is if they get a suspended imposition and they successfully complete, and then they are, under that code, removed from, quote, the sex offender registry open to public inspection, end quote.
If I understand you correctly, then what you're saying is should the chief and the sheriff decide to acquiesce to Mr. Miller's request, they would be in violation of the statute.
I think so.
It says shall.
I don't think there's any question about that. And the problem with Mr. Miller's argument, as I think was suggested by Justice Zinner's questions, if you go along with his argument, then you also can't publish, or the sheriff can't publish, rape of a child under 10, under 22-22-1-1, I think it is. You can't publish sexual contact with a minor, because in Claremont or Hecla or some small town, the public could look at this information and say, well, gee, John Doe was charged and he only had one minor in the house, so we're violating the privacy of that one minor when we say he's convicted of sexual contact with a minor.
Mr. Barnett, I'm going to interrupt you just for a minute to ask you that question about what the ones I looked at did not identify to that degree. The ones I was looking at basically just said rape in the second degree, sexual contact. They didn't go into even with a minor. I didn't see one that indicated that. Is there, I will ask you the same question, is there a uniform way that this information is being placed on the public registry?
I will assume, Your Honor, and there's no proof in this file to the contrary, that they are listing it according to the court judgment that comes down and says he was found guilty on such a date of XYZ offense. And I suppose we could even wonder whether or not every judge calls it rape in the third degree or rape of a child under 10 or, and of course we have rape by incest, which is sexual penetration, and then we have incest by sexual contact, which everybody calls incest, but maybe it's really sexual contact. That issue I don't think is in this case. He's saying incest and he's admitting that the father in this case was convicted of incest. And incest is what would have been on the site. So perhaps someday, if it's wrongly listed, that issue will then come up to this court. Let's suppose that he did sexual contact with a minor, but it was a neighbor kid. And we put in incest by some oversight or failure to have clear guidelines. Then she might have something to argue about.
Do you know whether the judgment in this one actually identified it as incest?
I don't know that. I'm making that assumption and simply stating the file doesn't show otherwise, and I haven't looked at it because, frankly, the plaintiff or the petitioner has conceded that incest under 19.1 is what happened, and incest is what we propose to put in there. And so what he's basically saying is the last sentence of 40 says we can't, under all these other statutes, say that he did what he did. Now, I note, 32 says put in the type, 32.1 says put in the type. I also note that the basic duty to register, if I may refer to my notes, 22-22-30, defining the crimes that are included in the registry, says, quote, regardless of the date of commission of the offense or the date of the conviction. In other words, they were throwing a great big retroactive net over all those past offenses, whatever they might have been called at the time, even if the legislature over time changes definitions, we're going to go back to 1968 and pick up whatever rape was defined as, or incest, or contact, and we're going to list it in today's record. And so clearly the legislature intended a broad net, and I think they're well entitled to do so given the public policy considerations which this court recognized in the Minders case.
It's also public policy, however, not to identify the victims.
Well, and I'm glad you brought that up, Your Honor, because I noticed under 23A, 6, 22, we say in a child abuse or neglect case, we're going to protect the identity of the child, and yet we give the initials. And so we're protecting confidentiality, and yet we, on my side of the fence and the court on its side, all recognize that we're going to look at the matter in the matter of A.N. and D.N. and C.N., the three children of this defendant. And so anyone who wanted to look at that public record, if they thought about it a minute, could figure out who A.N. and C.N. are. And indeed, then we go to trial, and we make these victims get on the stand. We don't like that. But the defendant is entitled to see them and confront them. And so to the extent that perhaps that invades their privacy or embarrasses them, we're sympathetic to that. But the fact is, if we're going to have an open court system, and if we're going to have a registry at all, we need to be able to give this type of information. And indeed, if you take Mr. Miller's position, then you have to go back and say, we can't post the type of offense contrary to the statute. In all those other categories of offenses, which are defined by the status and the age of the victim, you got to write all those out. And so then either those offenders get a buy, if you will, or we'll just simply say John Doe, I'll call him the father of Jane Doe, John Doe has a sex conviction, we can't tell you what it is. Well, how is that helpful? Because it certainly makes a difference to me if I'm in an apartment house, a complex, and I know that there's an offender in this complex. I want to know, what did he do? When did he do it? If the date narrows the class, it makes a difference to me if it was in 1962 or if it was in 2002. It makes a difference to me if it was forcible rape of a stranger. It makes a difference to me if it was incest and this is some relative of mine. I mean, that the whole purpose of all these statutes is to give the people enough information to judge the safety risk.
I come back then to my question again. The ones I looked at did not identify it to that degree. So is that, I think that goes back to the Chief Justice's question about is there discretion right now with the law enforcement officers on how they identify these crimes and whether they just say rape in the second degree, rape in the third degree, or whether they identify it any further and looking at these. At least the Minnehaha County one, it doesn't look like there's enough room to put in that space all that information.
2 points, Your Honor. I don't know which ones you looked at, so I don't know what they said, so I can't answer for those. I can answer for this one. And in this case, it is incest, and there's no dispute between the parties that incest is what he wants out, and it's what he did.
But is it possible that somewhere else another law enforcement officer in, say, Pennington County might have put it on as sexual contact and not identified it as incest?
I guess I'm only saying I think that's not an issue that's been tried in the case. And what
it does go to what they're required to do, the shall, as opposed to whether they have some discretion here.
Well, the statute says shall include the type. I don't think the statute puts a finer burden on it that they have to accurately define what type of incest. It just says the type, generically. And incest is a type. There might be several types of incest, but he did one of them. Okay, and the legislature's not commanded that it be more specific than that. It has commanded that we say the type. And what Mr. Miller wants to do is take general language at the bottom of Section 40 and write out about four or five of those statutes that say we want the type in, okay? And if you should grant his relief, you should expect that all the other categories of victims where they might have some motivation to try and keep this off the registry will be back to see you again. But and I might add,
isn't the question, though, in this case, aren't we just required to decide the word incest? No more, no less.
That's my opinion.
And then secondly, to follow up on Justice Meyer Henry's question, isn't it really, we've all been in the system for a long time, you know, the name, the type, is highly influenced by what the prosecutor puts in that very first complaint or information, because a lot of times, that's what gets carried over into the judgment and in all subsequent documents, and there can be a big difference of opinion as to how the crime as described in that initial charging document.
I think ultimately that's all resolved by what is he convicted of. The prosecutor can charge three alternative theories of what the guy did. He might charge it wrong, but the conviction, in my view, is satisfactory proof that in the eyes of a judge somewhere, he did do, in this case, incest.
But what if the prosecutor had never used the word incest and simply said sexual contact in violation of the statute number that's involved here?
Well, then I don't think Mr. Miller would have a case. I don't think he has a case in either event. I mean, if what he did is in truth and in fact, well, I'll rephrase that. I suspect he wouldn't have a case so long as it's accurate, okay? It might be too broad or too generic, too general. Let's say there's two classes of incest and we only say incest on the registry. I don't think that gives him some sort of a right that it has to specify which type of incest he did, okay? I don't know if that answers your question, Your Honor, but...
But wouldn't the type be broken down by sexual contact as opposed to rape? I mean, isn't that the crime? Isn't sexual contact and... aren't the two kinds of incest would be... One would be rape, one would be sexual contact, is that...
Correct.
Is that right? And then, but wouldn't the crime itself, the type of crime, be sexual contact or rape?
Well, you know, I don't know that that's a point that the petitioner has pursued here, since it's been agreed that that the father committed incest and that incest is what we've listed.
We have to interpret the statute.
I have to be honest, Your Honor, I can't see that it makes a difference. I honestly can't see, because he did incest. That is the type of offense, and the law does not require a finer point on that pencil, I don't think, of what's in there. We're listing what he did by his own, by their concession in the case.
However, the statute, I don't mean to beat this to death here, but the statute itself, when I'm looking at this 19.1, does not, the language of the statute itself, which was passed by the legislature, does not identify the crime as incest. There's not the word incest in 19.1.
Well,
it says sexual contact.
Okay.
So why does it need to be identified on the registry incest?
I would submit that the person looking at the website who sees that he's been convicted of incest might reasonably infer that at least sexual contact happened. He might infer that an incestuous rape happened, but at a minimum he would infer that sexual contact happened, which is what 19.1 talks about. There isn't any way to have incest unless you have at least sexual contact. So in my mind, there's no difference there for the purposes of this case. And I would add, I don't think we want to overlook a stipulation that was entered into by the parties, as well as the uncontested affidavit of Arden Gehring, which says, that's at paragraph 11, because of the number of relationships that meet the definition of degree of consanguinity, the registry itself does not provide the identity of the victim. I mean, I go back to Justice Zinter's original discussion with opposing counsel. What is identifying information? In our view, that means name, photograph, social security, physical description, age, address at time of the offense, the kind of things that would help you figure out it really is this particular Jane Doe. None of that is in there. And if you read it all, if you read that even saying the type of crime is in there under Section 40, you have to read out all of the purposes of the creation of the registry, of the publication of the registry, and of the several statutes that say we have a duty to put it in there. I'm going to wrap up here by saying I think that this is not a case of a conflict between statutes. I think you can very easily read Section 40 with its duty to make this a public record and all those others that say the type goes in. You can read those in harmony very easily without any reach of construction to say we can't put her name in, we can't describe her, and yet we can still put in the type of offense. And even if you say there is a construction problem, that these statutes are not clear and unambiguous, and we do have to use the rules of construction, then under the rules of construction, I think you have to read them all in harmony. And Mr. Miller wants you to read them all in disharmony, and then he wants you to render meaningless all the other provisions of that chapter. And indeed, if, as Justice Zinner suggested, his remedy is to go to the legislature and argue the privacy interest. But so far, the legislature has clearly made a policy decision that we're going to protect her name and her actual identity, which the detective uncontested says we don't give out. But beyond that, we're going to go with public information to the best extent that we can. And the motivations for that are beyond argument, even for Mr. Miller. And so in my view, there's no need for construction, and if you construe, you need to construe them in harmony. And in my view, this is, quite frankly, a very clear case. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barnett. Mr. Miller, you have 10 minutes, sir.
Thank you. Unless you have questions, I won't use 10 minutes. Let me start by asking if you have any questions in light of Mr. Barnett's argument.
Mr. Barnett feels that the duties of the chief and of the sheriff are mandatory. Do you share that view, or do you see some discretion in the statutes? Or?
It depends on how you interpret -32.1. Does that apply to public disclosure when it says it shall disclose, or does it apply to disclosure only to other registries or to law enforcement officers? If it applies to public disclosure, then the legislature is saying the type of crime. Then we get to the question that Justice Meyer Henry has been asking. But Jane Doe's position is that if it is applying to public disclosure, and if it does, by saying type of crime, demand that the word incest be brought out, then it is in conflict with the rights of Jane Doe not to have identifying information made public. And then we have, so maybe we can duck the question by saying, and I don't know the answer to this because the session law in 1998 doesn't make it clear to me, by saying that 32.1 does not apply to public disclosure. Maybe that just eliminates the whole question.
Well, it doesn't eliminate it because you still have Section 32.
Well, Section 30, you know, I do have to make this clear. I'm not claiming that any of the registration statutes themselves can't be followed. The registration still has to be done. The registration lists still are compiled. It still is sent to other states and national registries. It's still distributed among law enforcement officers. The annual burden upon the offender to register is still there. None of that is affected. The only thing that's affected is public disclosure. And so I guess my answer to your question, Your Honor, is that 32 is not implicated here. That, I think, has to do with the duties of registration itself. That's fine. I don't, you know, I conceded that in my first brief. This has nothing to do with that. This only has stuff to do with what is made available to the public.
I think you still have another hurdle. He's saying that the word incest does not constitute any identifying information. And it seems like your argument was that incest could be the prohibition against this in that it's possibly identifying information. So are you trying to get us to read any identifying information to be any possible identifying information?
The position that I took in my reply brief, because the appellees raised the same argument, actually at pages 3, 8, and 9 of the appellee's brief, and the position I took in my reply brief is the same position I'd make to Mr. Barnett's argument. Think about the examples of the things he gave you that he says are prohibited. The sex, the age. Well, the Social Security number is a definite identifier, so I'll take that one out. But let's say the age, for example. If it's true that we can't disclose the age of the victim, why is that true? It's true because it is a factor that has a tendency to narrow the class so much that the victim can be identified by the general public from that information. It has a tendency to allow you to figure out who the victim is. That must be what the legislature meant Because if they meant anything else, that language is surplusage. They just would have left it at name, and that would be it. But any identifying information must mean something else. And even under the examples that they cite in their brief and that Mr. Barnett gave you here today, the common factor for all of those is the tendency of that information to allow you to figure out, to allow the public to figure out who the victim is. And, you know, that's where we come down to your point, Mr. Justice Center, about the continuum. This is a continuum. I agree. But the legislature agrees that the continuum must, that we have to look at it that way, because otherwise you render that whole phrase, any identifying information, as completely meaningless. I guess I was answering your question, not yours. I'm sorry.
Why didn't the legislature say identifying information which tends to, or information which tends to identify?
I don't think they had to, because I think that's implicit in the phrase. It's implicit in the phrase because they also use the word name. I think Mr. Barnett's argument and the appellee's argument would make sense, and what you're asking me today would make sense, if the legislature just had that phrase there by itself. But they didn't. They coupled it with the alternative of name. And once they do that, we have to conclude that those two mean something different. And so we get down to the ultimate truth here is that in any incest prosecution under 2222.19.1, the class of potential, well, where it would result in a registry thing, because then there's a couple of additional elements. The offender has to be an adult, for example. But in any situation like this, the class of potential victims is so tiny that we are way over here. And then my position is that that by itself is so specific that it does tend to identify the victim. If you reject that mode of analysis, tend to identify the victim, then I lose. And it's that simple. But I don't think you should, because I don't think you can, given the language that the legislature used. And that is all I have.
Okay. Thank you, counsel. We'll be in recess for 10 minutes.